This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 116 for January 16th,
2008. Rated T for Teen.
Sierra Entertainment proudly presents World in Conflict, the most intense strategy game ever created. 5 out of 5. Easily one of the best gaming experiences of 2007. GameSpy.com. 9.5 out of 10. GameSpot.com Editor's Choice. A PC Gamer Editor's Choice Award winner, 93%. IGN.com's 94% Editor's Choice. War is coming home. World in Conflict. Available now for the PC.
Hey, we did give World in Conflict 93%. In fact, I did. Keep an eye on that one. That's going places.
That music just totally puts me in the mood.
So I'm your host, Dan Stapleton, and on board today we have...
Hi.
On board for this episode, we have our senior editor, Logan Decker.
I'm in the mood.
Senior executive editor, Chuck Osborne.
Oh, I'm not in the mood.
Senior executive intern, Norman Chan.
Food?
Our esteemed editor-in-chief, Kristen Salvatore.
I'm just moody.
And esteemed. And making this a very special episode, we've got our producer, Jeremy Williams, who normally calls in from Chicago, sitting in our offices where we can hit him.
That's right.
Yay!
Or throw things, whatever it may be.
Everybody throw stuff at Jeremy.
Oh,
did I hit him? We're all throwing stuff at
people. What the hell was that? Oh my god.
I got him with a flying monkey.
I thought it was a cat.
And the monkey screams too.
So this episode's a little bit different because we actually get to listen to all the little clips and things while we're recording. It's kind of like we're recording live in front of a live studio audience.
Yeah, usually Jeremy adds all that mojo later.
That's right.
So, this could throw off our whole thing, but we're going to try anyway. So, on to the news, where Valve has acquired Turtle Rock, the studio that was developing and is still developing Left 4 Dead, the zombie horror survival game. So they
smart move? Or smartest move ever?
get them now before somebody else snaps them up.
Yeah. Turtle Rock is based in San Diego, right?
Yeah, they're in SoCal, and Michael Booth, the guy who created the studio, originally worked with Valve to do the Counter-Strike Condition Zero expansion pack or standalone game. So his specialty is AI design.
Zero was the single player one, right? It was taking the Counter-Strike mechanic and trying to make a single player game out of it.
Right, it went through like four different versions. I think Gearbox had a hand in it, or Raven, or some other studio. And then the final version that came out was pretty much Counter-Strike with bots, with really smart bots. And the bots were programmed by Turtle Rock Studios. But now they're doing Left 4 Dead, as you mentioned, and we're really looking forward to it.
I'm going to take a second to look up how well that did, but in the meantime, how does this really affect things? I guess they ended up moving back the release date of Left 4 Dead, probably so that Valve, and they did a similar thing with Portal, right? They brought the developer team that were working on it. They brought them on board. And they pushed pushed it back and sexed it up a little bit. They added some Valve special sauce.
I think the scenario was a little different with Portal. It was pretty much some grad students at or some college kids at DigiPen, and Gabe Newell just went up to them and said, "I want to hire you guys." And then that's how Portal was created. They weren't working on Portal beforehand. I think Left 4 Dead was Drop.
Yeah.
Right. It wasn't the Portal that we knew. So I guess the magic sauce came in then.
Right. I did find the results there. We gave Condition Zero a 72%. The highs were very realistic bots, new and updated maps, bonus single player missions, and the lows were you can only play as the counter terrorists and the single player stuff. It's got kind of dated graphics at that point, and the no developed story at all. So, but yeah,
I remember I wrote that.
Yeah. Yes, that's what. This was a Norman Chan special. But yeah, what do you think do you think this is going to change how the game is going to come out? I mean, we played it at Showdown a little while ago, and it was a lot of fun then. And I guess Norm, you played it for an upcoming feature we've got.
Yes, it's our
next cover feature. Well, what other developers has Valve swallowed up?
Counter-Strike. The one guy who worked in Counter-Strike.
Right, but that's it.
A TF.
Maybe mod teams?
TF.
Oh, yeah, Team Fortress, and also the Day of Defeat guys. Well, I'm not sure if they...
That's who I was thinking of.
Yeah, Day of Defeat, yeah.
Right.
Well, of course, they had already pushed back Left 4 Dead to, you know, add some more awesome, because I think Valve, you know, after our reaction to it and after a lot of the very positive reaction out there, they got more and more excited. And so, you know, they wanted to add even more to the game. And I think that this is more telling of anything that, you know, they're really feeling positive about Left 4 Dead and how good the game's going to be going to be when it comes out.
I sort of like the idea that Valve is like cherry picking these specific like resources and people and mod makers who have these like these real specific strengths. Like they're, you know, like these guys really focus, you know, the focus is on AI, and, you know, the Team Fortress 2 guys was really focused on multiplayer. Like, they're building some sort of, like, developer sort of transformer. You know what I mean? Like, right, like snap them all together really, into, like, a...
Voltron.
They're just really excellent talent spotters. You know, they go around and they you know, look at the mod community, see what people are looking at, and they pick up the guys that have really great ideas and bring them in and you know, really use their resources to hone those ideas to you know, really great games.
So is there going to be... Is there going to be some tipping point at which, instead of us being like, how cool, Valve picked up so-and-so, that we're going to be like... ...companies eating up a bunch of smaller companies? Or are they still too, you know?
That tipping point will come when Valve starts making bad games, and
exactly.
I don't see that...
Absolutely.
I don't see that happening anytime soon, so the longer they can keep that up, the better.
So basically, Valve. As long as they're not just doing it for the dough...
Yeah, as long as
they're making money like hand over fist.
Right. Well, hey, you know, if they turn out great games, they deserve to make money hand over fist. It's well, as long as they don't turn into an EA where they take a bunch of licensed properties and turn out crappy little games to you know, capitalize on a movie opening. And
hater,
you know,
minute.
Well,
hater minute.
Valve is still a privately held company, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. So probably the tipping point will be whenever they go public.
When they go public.
If they ever go public.
Well, there's no real reason for them to go public. They've got all of them. They've got a ton of money. Unless Gabe Newell blows all his money in Vegas, I think they're in pretty good shape.
I just know, like, I remember having this conversation with Gaz just a few weeks ago, where he was kind of defending the idea that, like, you know, it's Valve, and they, you know, they're sort of fiercely independent, and they march to the beat of their own drummer, and they don't, you know, like, they're sort of dismissed from being maligned by the same attitude that we have about some of the other bigger companies swallowing up smaller ones.
Well,
so, and I still feel that way. I just wonder.
I mean,
well, they're only really big company.
There's very good reasons for that, and that's, you know, they don't have the corporate, you know, corruption kind of thing, the exploitation kind of feel you get from a lot of things that have been swallowed up by EA, and then they turn out sequels that aren't nearly as good as the original. They don't feel inspired. They just feel like you know, cheap copies.
So
a lot of that because of the financial burden they have, because they are public and there are a lot of revenue expectations from them, and so they need to make.
They're not beholden to satisfying stockholders.
Yeah, would Team Fortress 2? Would Team Fortress 2 have been anywhere near as good as it is if it had been pushed out in order to satisfy a quarterly earning report for the stockholders? Probably not.
So do you like? What if you know? I know everybody's watching with bated breath to see what happens with BioWare games now that they're. That EA are their new corporate masters. So if, you know, if nothing changes in the quality of those games, will you feel like that heralds a change in the way EA is treating these acquisitions, or they're just done in your eyes?
I would say it's a step in the right direction. I mean, you know, I'm fully open for EA to impress me. I mean, they do put out some good stuff. I mean, the CNC stuff they put out is generally pretty good.
Do you hear that, EA? Dan Stapleton says, "Impress me."
No, yeah, I was down there to do a story on Tiberium, the new CNC universe shooter they're working on, and those guys were telling me, you know, they've had 2 years in development before they said anything about the game. They were given all the resources they wanted. They had the opportunity to scrap it and start over if things weren't going well. So there does seem to be some movement in EA towards quality over quantity, which is really good to see. And maybe it's they feel Activision. Or before even the merger, they were feeling other people kind of breathing down their necks.
Activivizendard, right.
Yep. Somebody's unwrapping something.
Sorry. I don't know who that would be. Whoever it is, though, they should knock it off right now.
Yeah. So maybe it's the increased competition that is getting EA to start, whipping some of their people into shape and thinking more about quality over quantity, which would be great. And that is the whole point of competition in the industry. But back to Valve, they are putting out some new Team Fortress 2 stuff. They've got some they're updating and iterating. And Norm, have you been following this?
They have two new maps that are going to come out in a couple months. There's a preview online of one of the the first map that they're going to talk about called Badlands, which is a conversion of one of the original Team Fortress maps. It looks completely different, obviously. Design is different. It's not so much a straightforward or like as close a port as like 2-4 is. But, they're obviously...
It's a reimagining.
Yeah. And it's still going to be the same theme and style as the current Team Fortress 2 maps. And frankly, we're eagerly waiting for them because the six maps are great, but we want more.
Yeah, and 2 months is a long time to wait for a couple maps to come to perfection. Yeah. I mean, I know with all the classes, it takes a while to actually tweak the maps and everything, but that seems like quite a long time. And I would rather just let us beta test the maps.
Right. But I guess it's not like they haven't been doing anything new. They've been tweaking and adjusting the classes
adjusting classes and balancing stats and stuff. That's easy to do. But releasing a map and then releasing updates to a map where you change where a staircase is or where a ladder is. That's a fairly significant change. So I think they want to get the map settings down and then slowly change classes as an ongoing thing. I know they recently added some stuff to the sniper class and the medic class.
Yeah, they didn't necessarily they just kind of tweaked the way they control a little bit. Like you don't have to, or you can set it so that you don't have to, as the medic, hold the button down in order to keep healing somebody, which I think is pretty cool because
that
always bugged me a little bit. And the same thing with the sniper, they did a little tweak where you can set it so after you fire, it doesn't necessarily, and unless you wanted to, it won't zoom back in after you fire. So it's little tweaks like that to improve the control of the game.
But they have hinted at a huge game altering change they're making to the medic in the near future.
Right. I guess there was like more achievements and things like that to motivate people, and also I guess some other dynamic.
Yeah.
But they haven't given any indication. But we're all very anxious to see what that's going to be. Also launching online today is Savage 2, the sequel to I guess it was. What year did I say that was, Chuck, that first one came out? Was it 2003?
2003.
Right. So we gave that an 80%. So we're always pleased to see when a game that we enjoyed comes out with a sequel. Chuck, do you want to? You saw some of that today, right?
Yeah, the developers from S2 Games dropped by this morning to give us a little peek at it and to drop off the game, which is available free. Of charge, not the entire game, but the client is free, and it's for a major game these days. It's a pretty small download. It's only 575 megs, and so what the deal is, they're trying to get it out there like to everybody. So you should be able to pick it up from their website, which is s2games.com, or from fileradar.net.
But we should talk a little bit about what the game actually is. It's a hybrid RTS FPS, right?
RPG
and
yeah,
RPG.
It's an RTS RPG FPS. So
well, it's only missing what flight sim
and an adventure game. So one guy is the commander and he sets he can build things and everything kind of like in an RTS. He's playing looking at the map like you would in an RTS, and then. Other teammates are actually, playing in FPS mode, and they're on the battlefield.
Yeah, we actually did an interview with the game's producer a while back in which I made a fool of myself by not realizing that they had actually done this commander thing before Battlefield did. I was asking, well, you know, did Battlefield inspire you there? Actually, no, but yeah, I never really played the first one, but my roommate in college was really into the first one. So he was always going on about it. What was I into? I think I was sucked into Star Wars Galaxies at the time. I was in the beta on that, and I was really excited. Oh, I get to beta test a game, which turned out to be kind of broken. But yeah, I was kind of sucked into that, and I didn't have a whole lot of time for other things. But he was into Savage, which I know, it looked cool watching over his shoulder.
Have they tried to solve the problem of no one wants to follow the commander's orders?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. It launches today, so.
And it is. Yeah, we should specify that it is a fantasy game. It's not not, you know, like Battlefield with guns and stuff. I guess there are some ranged weapons, but I remember from a preview we did, we saw you can get siege weapons to attack the enemy base. You know, that you build structures like in an RTS, but you can get siege weapons that you control to attack the enemy base. You can also like research new player types. Is that right?
I don't know.
Well, maybe we should cut that out then. What do you think?
A moment of candor.
Yeah,
I did not actually play it, so.
Yeah. Norm, you played it, right? Norm?
Huh? Yeah. Yes.
Attention,
I did play
Norm.
Hello.
Yeah, you played Savage 2, right, for the preview?
Yeah, I did. I did a hands-on a while back. I don't. God, such a long time ago, but. Yes, you can build structures, and there are like, I remember a lot of different like melee weapons and also some cool projectile stuff like bow and arrows and stuff.
They did have a brute character that you can upgrade to, right? I remember reading a preview on that where you can upgrade to like the super beast character that I think has to kill other guys to stay alive, but it's a pretty exciting game. I'm looking forward to giving it a try now that it's live.
What are the RPG elements?
I think it's well, I know one thing is that it has persistent stats.
Okay.
And it can track them. And well, something else that was kind of cool that they mentioned during our discussion was that because they're going to be hosting all the games on their servers. Each and every game played is going to be saved. So you can go back and you can replay a game that you played like a couple of months ago. Watch it. Yeah. Right. And you can actually, fast forward or rewind.
And rewinding is huge. Why don't all game replays have rewinding? It drives me nuts.
I hear you.
And I go and watch replays of Supreme Commander games sometimes because I'm still not nearly as good as a lot of the people that really know the economy. You know, they've got it down, and I'll miss something, and these games can go like an hour or more, so I'll miss something, and it's like, how did that happen? And I want to go back and see, and I can't rewind.
I think
that
it's probably
drives me crazy.
Well, like the Prince of Persia stuff was really innovative in that it did that, but it's probably a real technical trick because, you know, games aren't animations. They're processes that are played out linearly, and you can't play those processes backwards.
Right, but it'd be nice if they could somehow like cache the orders for a little while, and so you can just kind of play it back. That'd be a nice thing. Chris Taylor, if you're listening, yeah.
I love the idea that you're sitting around watching your old Supreme Commander games. Like, take that, Rider Strike.
I'm not watching. I'm not watching my own games. Well, sometimes I am, but I'm
boy,
I'm
that,
watching,
that was a great game. Look how I came back here.
I'm watching other people how they play, and that's really how you get.
What do you
really
want to do tonight, honey? Why don't we just hang out and watch some old Supreme Commander games?
my girlfriend actually hates.
Well, it's great for sharing. Like,
you don't say.
No, I mean, there are other games that she's okay watching. Subcom, she can't stand. I don't know why. Mm-hmm.
But if you do want to try out Savage 2, it's a fairly painless download, and it's the first 5 hours are free to play in demo mode, and then if you want, you can unlock the full game for $29.99 and pay for it all within the game, just like old shareware games.
And, yeah, you should definitely pay for it, unlike a lot of people with Call of Duty 4, apparently. The chief operating officer at Infinity Ward posted on a blog talking about, you know, how the game is going and, you know, their plans for the future and things like that. He was also saying, you know, it's no wonder people, you know, hardly anybody makes PC games anymore because, according to their stats tracking all of the online activity with Call of Duty 4, there's a large percentage, he didn't elaborate on that, but a large number of people playing with hacked games and serial numbers that are pirated. Which Logan and I mean, like it struck us as odd. It's like why if they can tell when somebody's using a pirated serial number or a hacked game, how are they allowed to play online? I mean, shouldn't they be able to ban that? Yeah, I thought that had been like standard operating procedure since like Tribes. I mean that struck me as odd.
And plus, you know, I always sort of cringe a little bit when they talk about, especially the movie studios, when they talk, well, we lost this many billions of dollars, you know, because of piracy. Where do these figures come from? You know, I could understand if your business was going under, but, you know, let's see some figures and methodologies on how you got those numbers.
Well, MPD numbers just came out.
Yeah.
And Call of Duty is still, it's still the top-selling PC game. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, in a case like this, you can see the number of people playing, and you can, and especially if you can tell the number of people that are playing with pirated software, you can tell exactly how much you would have had if all of those people had
paid. Yeah, but that's assuming they would all have bought the game rather than play something free. You know,
but they're not running a charity here. I mean,
no, absolutely not. You know, but I still find it a little weird. Like if you know who's playing, you know, with cracked keys or fake, you know, generated keys or whatever.
They're gathering info on the pirates and then,
at the very least,
so you
doors.
Can gather your goon squads and send them straight to their houses.
Yeah. At the very least, you should be able to ban their IPs, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, with a game like Call of Duty where the single-player campaign is only like 6 or 7 hours, you know, at least you'll have thwarted, you know, a good chunk of the enjoyment they would have gotten out of stealing your software.
Yeah. Maybe it's not as easy as all that. I'm not really sure, but I would love to know.
It seems like it gets made more difficult for pirates once you implement another line of defense like Steam, you know, and that's why more and more games are probably going to be turning to those kind of services. Even though the copy protection aspect of it is kind of a pain in the butt for all of the legitimate clients.
Right. I mean, even that doesn't stop the people that are dead set on pirating it. I mean, there are groups out there that just seem to get a lot of joy out of the act of piracy, out of breaking the protection. So and it's always going to happen. I mean, even Half-Life 2, which was tied to Steam, was ended up pirated. So
yeah,
it's
but the multiplayer stuff, not so much.
But right, that's why this is such a head scratcher to me. I would think that adding multiplayer action, you know, where you need your own unique key, is a great anti-piracy tool. Because
the whole point.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not really really 100% sure what's going on here. But
good question. Ask them.
When I know, you'll all know.
Yeah.
How about a musical break?
Let's have a musical break.
I love music.
So do we have to dance for this?
Dance, Chuck, dance. Jim dance.
I wish your listeners could see this right now. Whoa.
Tune in for a video podcast.
I can't believe the iPhone doesn't take f***ing video. I whipped out my iPhone. I'm like, don't.
I am tired out. Yeah. Boy, that was
you
great.
Wait. Him go. It was awesome, and it won't take.
This has suddenly turned into like the Ellen DeGeneres show or something. Like, I love to dance. Come on. Okay, so what are we giving away? Yeah.
Chuck, I have an object here I can bludgeon you with if you don't stop imitating Ellen.
So, DJ, were you playing Supreme Commander for your girlfriend on your anniversary? I was just curious. Like, I don't understand. She just will not get into it.
Yeah, I don't get it. So on to some rumor mongering or you know, spreading of lies and baseless unfounded
lies.
So Warcry.net is reporting that Perpetual, the company that recently canceled Gods and Heroes, and they said they wanted to concentrate on Star Trek Online. According to Warcry, who cite multiple sources inside Perpetual, they're no longer working on Star Trek Online, and they have sold the IP or the license that they got from. I guess who owns it now? Star Trek. I mean, all the conglomeration. Is it CBS? I guess that, or whoever.
Paramount, isn't it?
Isn't it still Paramount?
Yeah.
Well, Paramount. I think Paramount is owned by CBS though, who are in turn owned by the Umbrella Corporation. I don't know, but yeah. So they sold the license to the Star Trek MMO. To another Bay Area developer, according to this. Now, who that is, that we're not sure, or we're not even sure that it actually happened. I've emailed Perpetual about it. They're actually not on speaking terms with their former PR agency, so hard to get information out of them.
yeah, that's not a good sign.
Yeah. So we're still trying to get any kind of confirmation about that. But
the fact that the multiple sources that they had quoted were Ferengi, I think, cast some doubt on the rumor. so I don't know.
Never trust.
Yeah, can't you go and stroke a lobe and get some information?
I said stroke a lobe on the air.
Yep.
That's a first.
At this point, I'm starting to think that Perpetual is run by Ferengi. I mean, I'm not sure what's going on over there. Although, Ferengi are generally interested in making a profit. I'm not sure that they're doing that.
That's true. So their grand total of games in development have gone from 2 to 0 at this point, then.
Well, if this rumor is true. Yes. Now, personally, I'm kind of glad to see this happen because I mean, I like the stuff that had come out about Star Trek Online... has been I haven't been all that excited about it. And there have been two screenshots that came out. There was one space-based one, which looked okay, kind of cartoony, but then there was a ground-based one that just looked kind of awful. So I'm not too sad to see this go. I hope whoever's hands it landed in treats it a little better. And
I think the ground-based screenshot it didn't look that bad to me, and I'm willing to accept it. Lower graphic level. For just being in a Star Trek MMO, how cool is that?
Now, Norm and I were discussing this on the way into the office today. But,
I don't know if it was much of a discussion.
let me guess. It was Norm listening to Dan rant.
It was not Norm. This was a two-sided conversation.
That was a wild guess.
Is there anybody in this office that you haven't had, in this building that you haven't had this conversation with?
Yeah, well, this particular conversation.
The woman who comes by to water the plants every 6 months?
Stop her! What do you think about Voyager?
I only discuss Voyager when provoked. but no, Norm and I were talking about how you would make a good Star Trek MMO. And Norm felt that a lot of it should be like a ground-based game, and I felt that the ground-based aspect. Well, that a lot of it should be.
I love exchanges of ideas.
If you're going to express yourself, express yourself. Let's hear it, Norm.
I said that given how most MMOs are played out, I think that what would eventually happen is that a lot of the game would have to be a ground-based game, and right. I would think that. The space-based game would be really fun, but I don't think that every player should have their own capital ship.
No.
Well,
no.
Okay. this is where Norm was thinking inside the box. There's a box, and Norm is in it. That's where he's thinking. I'm just hoping they don't make a WoW clone out of it, because that's been done. I'm not interested in playing WoW again.
Well, but okay. Given how MMO dynamics usually work. How would you actually go about making a good Star Trek MMO?
I would do something primarily space-based, and there could be some ground-based stuff, but not a whole lot. The meat and potatoes would be in space. I think that everybody needs to be able to, not necessarily have to, but be able to command their own starship from a very early point in the game, because Norm was saying, you should start out with a runabout. How much fun is it in the Star Trek universe to run around in a shuttlecraft? I mean, really, that's not Star Trek. I'd never see anybody doing that in the show.
Hey, Scotty seemed to enjoy it.
Yeah. But no, I mean, like the whole joy of Star Trek is commanding your own ship, and I don't think that a whole lot of people are going to be happy just being a helmsman.
But isn't that like saying that people wouldn't be happy playing a medic in
Yeah.
Or how do you explain the cantina musicians in galaxies?
I really can't explain those people. But I think that does help to explain the lack of popularity of Galaxies. Now, what I do think they should do is allow you to man posts on a ship, take positions on the bridge, which, you know, would let players cooperate on a single ship and have that give that ship a lot of advantages, but don't force it. And, you know, I want to be able to command my own ship. I don't want to have to sit there and take orders from some 14-year-old all day. That's not fun.
But is a space-based sort of theme, isn't it? Wouldn't it be too constricting given your prime directives? You know, would it be as fun as it sounds?
I think so.
You know,
I mean,
if you weren't able to interfere with cultures, you know, to me, that's why, you know, I mean, if I can't blow shit up, then... Oops.
Well, you know, honestly, I think once Roddenberry died, they kind of got rid of that. they interfere all the time now.
Well, they would do it one. Changed. They would do it 1 week, and then next week they would forget all about that.
But they would apologize.
Yeah.
We're sorry we blew up your planet.
Has anybody heard of anybody, you know, so far saying, "Oh no, the Star Trek MMO is in trouble"?
Not really. I mean, there just wasn't that much information out about it that people had gotten super attached to it. So. And this isn't saying you know, it's been canceled. So, you know, everybody who wants a Star Trek MMO isn't now saying, you know, I'm never going to get one. So and you know, if it's moved out of the hands of a troubled company into a healthy one, hopefully, that's good news.
Yeah,
I would rather see it done well than half-assed. You know, and soon.
Well, now it looks like from the few screenshots that we've seen that it takes place in what, the Next Generation universe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, given that the new movie is going to be back in the classic universe,
right?
Doesn't it make more sense that they try and model it after the new movie, which could possibly be popular?
Possibly, but the rights that Perpetual had were not for that movie. So the rights, they break these rights up in all kinds of crazy ways. For example, Bethesda currently holds the rights to make non-MMO Star Trek games in all like all five era, all five series and the movies. They don't own the rights to the upcoming movie, and neither does Perpetual. Perpetual just owns the rights to make an MMO.
Well, but it doesn't have to be based on the movie, though. It could just be based on the classic universe. Actually, talking about MMO, you know, storylines, I would actually think that a Star Trek Academy sort of MMO would make more sense, because that way you could actually, you know, develop your skills and eventually become a captain.
Right. Eventually, but no, TJ wants everyone to have their ship in the first 10 minutes of the game.
Well, this is another thing that Norm and I discussed on the way in, which was kind of the Age of Conan model, which is to have the first part of the game be a single player experience, which I think would be cool to have a part of the game where each person controls a portion, or I guess rather where the player gets to go on missions, taking orders from an AI captain, as different, you know, manning different posts and different, you know, filling different roles, and then gets to captain his own ship for the remainder of the game, because again, taking orders is not that much fun.
Or maybe it could follow the Gods and Heroes model. You know, Perpetual could bring that over, or would have brought over, and you could be surrounded by red shirts.
Yeah, there you go.
Followed everywhere by little red shirt NPCs.
Right. But enough Star Trek nerdery for now.
can there ever be enough Star Trek nerdery, really, on
not
this
for
podcast?
Me, no. On to some Assassin's Creed rumor nerdery. There were some specs that came out today that from unconfirmed sources saying that the recommended system specs called for 3 gigabytes of RAM and like all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, they.
Well, these are the recommended system specs, right? Not the minimums.
Right.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I know you think that they're crazy, but I don't know. I think they might be right on.
Who has 3 gigs of RAM, though? You can't even run 3 gigs in XP.
Yeah, Logan, tell him why you can't. Why it would never recommend 3 gigs of RAM?
Because Windows XP wouldn't recognize it if you've got home, or excuse me, 32-bit.
Yeah, Vista 32-bit wouldn't recognize it either. Or they would recognize it, but they wouldn't make use of it.
Yeah,
right?
Wouldn't make use of it.
Yeah,
it's so, just it cuts out like a huge swath of, you know, your available base.
Well, but
32-bit
okay,
system needs 4 gigs of total memory, including system memory. If they're recommending, you know, 8800 graphics card with 768 megabytes of RAM, and you know, you can still use 3 gigs.
But well, right, their minimum system requirements still call for 2 gigs of RAM, though, which means that you could still operate the game under Windows XP.
Right. I don't know. I don't.
Maybe maybe some confusion in how all this was communicated. You know,
I do not believe this. I've got an email into the PR contact for this game, and he's checking on whether there's any truth to this. But I don't think this is accurate. I would be very surprised if they actually.
I mean, I think what's more interesting about these reported system recommendations is that they also recommend that you play with a gamepad as opposed to the keyboard and mouse.
Optional though.
Again, I don't find that surprising at all, because I think that this is one of those
because
games
the original game was designed, you know, as a third person action
and
game.
Plus it's probably going to be a game for Windows game, which all those games do support the Microsoft Sidewinder
or 360 game. They recommend them. That's the difference. Recommending and supporting are two entirely different things. Crysis supports a 360 controller.
You're
that
saying
doesn't mean
it doesn't bode well for keyboard and mouse control.
Exactly. Right.
Well, I got to play a little bit of it at E3, and I'll have to admit that, you know, they were still trying to hammer out the PC keyboard controls at the time. It certainly seems like it would be a lot easier to control using a gamepad.
Right, but they've got another couple months to figure it out.
Yeah, but trying to duplicate when you're doing, you know, when you've got the game mechanics, like something in Assassin's Creed where you need to duplicate analog movement, you know, and
they just have to change the controls.
I'm really warming up to playing, for example, the new Tomb Raider games with the gamepad.
Well, yeah.
It's too bad. I thought we were moving away from these save as console ports, you know, with games like BioShock that had two independent teams working on the interfaces.
Right, but this is Ubisoft, so and their ports have always been kind of meager. But and if you look at the Rainbow Six Vegas port, there were some issues with that, right, Norm?
Yeah, definitely, like the widescreen stuff. But I think that's most of that stuff's pretty much fixed now, and I'm not that worried about the next Rainbow Six.
I'm just hoping that it doesn't launch on day one needing a gigabyte patch, like many other Ubisoft PC games.
How big was the patch for Dark Messiah?
Oh gosh, well,
was
which,
that IDOS
which one?
Or Ubisoft? Was that Ubisoft?
Yeah, that was Ubisoft.
Yeah, okay, right.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact size, but it was definitely in need of a patch.
Right, right. So moving on to yet another rumor, and this one has actually been debunked. There were some screenshots put out that were allegedly Crysis 2 screenshots that just showed some environments. It looks a lot like Crysis with some more post processing done. You know, some nicer wave action.
Even more post processing done.
Yeah, this is.
Go on. It just looked like, you know, someone in the level editor added a lot of foliage and increased, you know, the graphics to very high graphics and took some screenshots and maybe, you know, designed some streets or something. Yeah, it didn't look any way indicative of a you know, what Crysis 2 might look like. And like you said before, it's been debunked.
Yeah. Will somebody get these kids out of my internet?
Yeah. Yeah, people jump at every little you know, Photoshop or whatever. So yeah, there's nothing at all on a Crysis 2 yet. Although Savat Yearly, the head of Crytek, has been, you know, interviewed referring to Crysis as a trilogy. So you know, despite what I guess we may have heard about Crysis's sales numbers, I guess they're still planning on going ahead on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, given the ending of the first game, you know, there'd better be a second game.
Right, but given the ending of Golden Compass, there you'd think there would be a second movie, but there's not going to be.
or maybe Sin Chronicles.
Yeah. Or, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
or,
Sin Episodes.
Sin Episodes, yeah.
Sin Episodes,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Or maybe, do you suppose the Dungeon Siege movie was supposed to be a trilogy? Because that's not going to be.
What's happened? Jason's what's his last name?
Statham.
Statham.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
Sobieski. What happened?
What happened to John Rhys Davies and Burt Reynolds and Ray Liotta? You know, like they had a
hey man, gotta eat.
Yeah,
come on.
Lord of the Rings.
You're telling me.
Well, funny.
Here's
last
what John, John Rhys Davies. Here's how he explained his participation in the movie to GameDaily.com. He says, I'll be honest with you. The builders have not finished my house, and I was going mad, and I thought, this could be fun. So basically he's saying he took the job to get out of the house.
And then what's the rest of that one?
He says, who else is in it? Oh, Bert's in it. I'm on. Let's go see if we can make a success out of this one.
I never would have thought that John Rhys Davies and Burt Reynolds hung out.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently he thought this was Cannonball Run 3 or something.
Yeah.
Wanted to join in, you know. So it costs...
The next time you sign a contract, read the fine print.
So it cost $70 million to make and made, what, $3 million in its first weekend.
I can't believe it made that much.
That's shocking. I mean,
that's Uwe Boll going over and over and over.
Well, the $70 million, I think, was just like a production cost, because there was a huge marketing push for this movie. I saw TV ads everywhere, you know, billboards, and those don't come cheap.
600,000 tickets online.
And just the printing of the...
Fandango.
I mean, it was showing in like 2,000 theaters, and just to make 2,000 prints of a movie, they're like, you know, several thousand dollars each. For a print of a movie, they can't cover the costs with, you know, 20 people per showing, right?
That is just a huge like money sink. I can't comprehend the logic of anybody giving this guy money.
Oh, but well, I mean, on the other hand, there was no way of knowing that this was going to bomb.
He is. It's like a bully picking on producers for the lunch money. He said, "If you don't give me money, I'm going to beat you up."
So how Uwe Boll had been funding these things in the past was that, you know, he gets these financed in Germany, and they used to have this tax shelter where somehow, you know, I guess if you made a big scale movie and it bombed, you weren't out all the dough or something. Well, anyway, Germany has done away with this, probably because of him. And so now he has, like, officially thrown in the towel. He's saying, okay, that's going to be my last, you know, super big budget movie. And so now he's saying that, you know, his next movies will probably be, like, around $7 million.
Mm. I mean, the Postal movie still hasn't come out yet.
Apology.
What was that? Sorry, one at a
time. German consulate has issued an apology.
Yeah, like Norm was saying, that the Postal movie still has not been in wide release in any way, shape, or form, even on DVD.
Wait, did they release it at all?
No.
It's done. It's in the can. I think they're looking for a distributor. And
who wants to distribute this crap?
I mean, the trailer's on apple.com/trailers. You can watch the entire, you know, the entire trailer there, and it looks like a Uwe Boll film. I mean,
if you want to, you know, ruin your day, go ahead. Yeah. Go watch the trailer.
But the thing is, okay, so we're going to make fun of the guy, but Blood Rain 2, apparently, and I saw the movie, it is terrible, but apparently the DVDs have done pretty well, and they are making a third one, which is supposed to be the last movie. But supposedly... Blood Rain 2, it sold 30% of its stock at Best Buy and Walmart.
Vampire movie where she fights Billy the Kid.
Yes.
Where a B-list actress wouldn't even come back and reprise her role.
Yeah, that's just impressive. And who's buying these things, really? Did any of you buy one?
Maybe they put like a different label on the top of the movie. Like,
I'm looking at you, Logan. Did you buy this movie?
Oh, come on! I'm the one who buys DVDs.
Chuck has a very healthy DVD collection. Including,
they wrote Star Wars on the cover.
Yeah. Chuck's DVD collection includes a large volume of movies he has never actually watched.
That is true. I will cop to that.
Yeah.
But come the apocalypse, everyone's going to be at Chuck's house.
All right. So how about we take a break and then head off to and take some questions.
APC Girls.
Chuck danced again.
Oh, that was awesome. So Logan was going to try to take video of me. He points the camera at me. It has the lens cap on it. Logan fail.
Epic fail. You have your epic fail and you have your Logan fail. They're kind of
synonymous.
Lens cap.
APC Gamer, this is Simon from Ireland. Just wanted to say how much I love the podcast. And I tried Peggle Extreme thanks to NVIDIA, and it was fantastic. So I bought Peggle straight away. It's worth every penny. The website Mod Database is currently running its annual Mod of the Year competition. So I thought I'd ask you what some of your favorite mods have been over the years. Thanks.
Favorite mods? Who's got one?
You know, actually, okay, this is going to sound like it's just, you know, like, I forget what it is, sucking up or whatever. But, you know, one of my favorite mods was the Quake 3 mods that we did with Coconut Monkey and, you know, the ones inside the video game store and stuff.
Well, yeah, that was more about
that's
math,
called,
right?
That's not sucking up. That's called shameless self-promotion.
Those are the words.
The pad maps.
Yes, the pad maps. Thank you. Yes, pad shop. I love those maps.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Rocket Arena.
Rocket Arena was really well polished and it had great versions for, you know, Quake 1, Quake 2, and Quake 3.
Yeah.
I think Desert Combat for Battlefield 1942 is probably my favorite mod, just because it you know, took a World War II game and turned it into modern day, and now those guys are just about to release their first real game, Frontlines.
Frontlines, Fuel of War, yeah.
Gary's mod
is huge. And, you know, we've of course got to mention Team Fortress 2, Counter-Strike, Day of Defeat, all the...
I don't know if anyone on the staff has ever been, like, a real big Counter-Strike guy. I know, what was that other Half-Life mod that we were all really
into?
Day of Defeat? No, not Day of... We liked Day of Defeat a lot. There was another one that had similar mechanics. It was the one where you had to apply bandages to yourself when you're hurt, and then... It was one of the first mods that had the delayed respawn time, so you'd respawn in groups. And I think it was World War II.
I remember that. What was that?
We were really into that, and I'm surprised I can't remember the name.
Wait, was that enemy territory?
No. It was way before. It was original Half-Life mod. And of course, we were big fans of TFC. I think TFC as a collective group for PC Gamer is our favorite mod ever. Team Fortress Classic. And now that Team Fortress 2 is out, you know.
Well, that's not a mod, though.
Exactly.
But,
got to give it up for Aliens TC, too. I mean, you can't have a mod discussion without mentioning that. The granddaddy of them all.
The Foxed Aliens conversion, is that?
I think that was around before Fox started foxing things.
I don't know. It was an Aliens mod for, what, Doom 2 that was Foxed?
Yeah,
I think that's where the origin of the phrase.
Right.
So
was it called Firearms?
That sounds right.
Firearms for Half-Life. I think that was the mod.
And to be Foxed, just for everybody who doesn't know, is where you make a mod based on somebody else's intellectual property, for example, Fox, and they will come and send you a cease and desist saying you can't use our stuff. Speaking of mods that use other people's intellectual property, one of my favorites is the Warlords mod, Star Wars Warlords for Homeworld 2, where a really talented guy goes by the name of Evil Jedi, he's a one man modding machine. He puts like every Star Wars ship you can think of and a lot you haven't into Homeworld 2. And you know, really, really nice quality models, and very, very well done. You know, balancing of the ships and everything. It's. I highly recommend checking that out. I have seen Evil Jedi lurking around the forums for the Sins of a Solar Empire beta, which has me excited, because I think that'll make a great platform for a Star Wars mod. I'm also really hoping somebody will make a Star Trek mod for it, which that game's coming out, I guess, next month, and. It's a great, great big epic space RTS.
Dominion War on PC.
Yeah. Well, there was the Dominion War game that just wasn't any good.
Hello, PC Gamer Podcast. It's your old friend Vagabond. It's been about 15 episodes since I last sent in something, so I was just checking up on you, making sure you weren't lonely or anything. Anyway, I have a question for you. What happened to the mech/giant robot genre? They have been nearly dormant for many years now, and I'm quite sad because of this. One of my all-time favorite video games was the original Heavy Gear. Not that Heavy Gear 2 crap. It had an epic story, and the graphics and gameplay were really, really good. But around 2000, the entire genre of mech games just died. What's the deal? Maybe now with all these hyperprocessors and super-duper graphics cards, you know, DirectX 10 mech games will give us great eye candy in gameplay. So what do you think caused the death of mech games?
I guess he's not talking about Supreme Commander. There's some giant robots in that.
Right.
Carbon emissions.
FASA closed.
Right.
One thing.
Right, but they only closed this last year. I mean, what were they doing? I guess they were working on Shadowrun before that.
Well, I think a lot of those types of games actually went over to the consoles.
Right.
They just kind of packed
up. They were consoleized.
But even
Mech Commander.
I didn't see as many of them on the consoles.
Well, they had that one real simulator with the $170 controller.
Do you remember that thing? Yes, controller.
Was that a PlayStation?
I think it was Xbox.
An Xbox game.
Okay.
I never saw it, actually. I saw it on the websites and everything, but I never saw one in person. It looked amazing.
It was crazy.
That other magazine I used to work at before I worked there. I know it's hard to believe I had a life before this one, but there was one in that office. I wonder if part of the reason is just that, like, maybe the appeal of being the real guy piloting the giant robot has given way to just, you know, fighting the giant robot.
Right, it required a lot of patience.
Being the giant robot, you know what I mean?
You had to be a patient player. I remember when MechWarrior 2 came out, there was a debate between, is it an action game or is it a simulator? Like, what category do we even put it in?
And you simulate action.
But then you went on to, like, MechWarrior 4, and it was this arcade game.
Yeah, there are a couple in recent memory. I forget the name of one. But there's, like, more Japanese-themed ones on, like, PlayStation 3 and Xbox. And they're like fast mechs, you know, mechs that can fly and hover and fire like a gazillion rockets. But I think the ones that are more fun are definitely the old school MechWarrior, the simulator ones, where, you know, you're piloting this rumbling mech and you can use your flight stick to, you know.
Well, I was just gonna say, why not just play flight sim games then? You know, I think
because you can't fire, you know, rockets with flight sim.
Yeah.
Or lasers, frickin' lasers.
Frickin' lasers.
Yeah, so to answer your question, we don't really know.
We would love for there to be a resurgence.
Yeah. The main reason that usually, you know, crops up is the last ones that were made didn't make a whole lot of money. And if a game makes a lot of money, they make more of them generally. So that would be the logical assumption as to why it didn't happen.
Hey guys, this is Waffles from Arizona. I'm a big fan of the magazine and the podcast. Recently, I heard a report on National Public Radio about the Halo novel Contact Harvest that is on the USA Today and New York Times bestseller lists. During this report, Halo's game designer and author of the book, Joseph Staten, was quoted as saying, "You don't have a lot of time to tell story while the bullets are flying, and every time you stop the player from shooting to tell him a story, you need to be really fast, really efficient. Make it cool, but quick." Given the success of the Half-Life 2 series of games and their incredibly immersive style of gameplay, I don't believe this statement is accurate at all, and I wanted to get your opinions on it. Thanks very much, and keep up the great work.
Well, Half-Life doesn't typically stop you for very long to talk at you. I mean, there are scenes, establishment scenes, where Alex will block a door and say, you know, "Oh, Gordon, help us! You know, you are your only hope."
That's a good impression, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
That's exactly what it's like. Wow. Yeah. That's crazy. It's like
I was playing the game.
Yeah. One of our good design decisions, though, is that, you know, you're always in the cutscene. You know, it never cuts away and shows you from a third-person point of view or anything.
Which Halo does.
Very different kinds of games.
But, yeah, exactly. I mean, I think in a first-person shooter, I absolutely agree with that statement. Keep it short, keep it quick, and at a minimum, because I want to be playing. But if it's an adventure game, I'm in it for the story.
I like the option that the Ken Levine games give you, which is you can play like a straight shooter and not stop and smell at the roses, or you can stop and listen to all the recorders, read the diaries, and get the story if you want it.
Well, yeah, if you want to understand what the hell happened, then you do actually have to listen to everything.
Well, I mean, there are no cutscenes.
It's like you're running around scraping the story off the floor.
I don't know. There are no cutscenes in Half-Life or Bioshock, except at the very end of, I guess, of both. Whereas Halo has cutscenes throughout, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that I think is what he was talking about, that for the cutscenes, where they actually take you out of the game, play a video. They want to keep those short and sweet and then get you back into the game.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, for those, I definitely agree. I know it seems like with games made in Japan, they have a very different attitude towards that. Like, you know, the longer you can stretch out a dialogue sequence, the longer you can make a cutscene, the better, it seems.
Yeah.
What I think is interesting about the popularity of the Halo, it actually surprises me that the Halo novel is doing so well, because given that it is a really different kind of game than, say, Half-Life, where I think part of the appeal for people who really like the Half-Life games is the story, is feeling like you're immersed in the story. Like, the pacing, its pacing, while not super fast, is what's so great about it. Whereas Halo is much closer to a run-and-gun experience. I'm surprised that people who are into that are also into sitting down to read the backstory.
Yeah, since when can Halo players read?
Oh.
Sorry. I had to use that one. How do I not use that?
That was fantastic.
Attention forum posters. That was Dan Sable.
Yeah, right. Reach him at Dan S. Hitting, at BCGamer.com.
Not necessarily.
Reach him at your own peril.
I have
you
played
have been
Halo
warned.
Myself. I,
oh, I'm, and tell him how much you love Voyager.
Especially the finale.
Well, actually, hey, there you go. You know, yet another example, like video games inspiring people to read. Well done.
Yeah.
That's probably all the time we got. Do you guys want to do a playlist?
The question period is over. No more questions.
All right, some playlists then after the break.
All right, so it is time for the playlist period. Chuck, you'll be the first on the playlist thing.
All right, well, I've been playing the new Sam & Max episode, Sam & Max Moa Better Blues, which is the second adventure in the second season, which is more of the fun and frivolity from Sam & Max. It's available now from GameTap, and I think you can also buy it separately from TelltaleGames.com. More fun and hijinks. You know, I always talk about Sam & Max, and it's like, well, what more can I say about it? It's a fun adventure game series.
Yeah, they're coming out every month, so you gotta, and it's not like you can avoid.
And one thing I want to add before we move on is that we are still looking for America's Next Top PC Gamer reviewer. In case you missed our previous podcast where I talked about it, or our February issue, right now up until February 10th. If you want, you can send me a 150-word review of Peggle to me at chuck@pcgamer.com with the words Next Top Reviewer in the subject line. And basically what I'm looking for is a really great review of Peggle that would possibly make me want to make you one of our regular freelancers.
Yeah. You can do it.
you can do it and not get paid very much for it.
Fine print.
Logan, what are you playing?
Well, now that Eidos has all this great stuff on Steam, I've been dabbling around in their back catalog. And okay, I admit I'd never played Hitman, the Hitman series before. I don't know what I was been waiting for. It's fantastic.
The second one is kind of a misstep, but the third and fourth are good.
I'm on the third now, and
have you killed Dan Morris yet? Oh no, he's in the fourth one.
Yeah, really, really enjoying that. And then still working on World in Conflict, and as well as the Sam & Max series.
Norm?
Just more shooters. I'm playing a game called Alpha Prime for review, but also playing a lot of online stuff. Call of Duty 4 multiplayer with Will Smith at Max PC. Playing in the hardcore mode. It's really fun because you lose your crosshairs. Everyone dies in like two shots. And the whole HUD is gone, so it's really intense. And also playing TF2 a lot now that we have our own server. I want to announce that our server just went live yesterday.
Surprise!
Surprise! The server is brought to you courtesy of a provider called Nuclear Fallout. If you want to check them out, they're at nuclearfallout.net. And if you want to join the server, it's pcgmaxpc.nuclearfallout.net.
It's pronounced nuclear.
Nuclearfallout.net.
Wow, you...
And it's based in West Coast, so if you're in our area, you will get fast pings. And if you identify
yourself, and if you're on the East Coast, you're screwed.
You're out of luck.
If you identify yourself as a listener of the podcast, we won't kick you.
Kristen, what have you been playing?
Oh, I must have been a bad girl, and not in a good way. Because
I'm sorry. I apologize for this in advance.
This is all Chuck's fault.
Oh boy. So, you know, I don't, just because of all of the other kind of demands of my job, I don't get to review stuff for the magazine very much lately. So when I do, I usually ask for something that's going to be kind of small. And so I'm reviewing Swashbuckler's Blue versus Gray. It's making me a sad panda.
Blue versus Gray versus Kristen.
It's really,
now,
it's
Kristen,
really
who's
something else.
Who's winning, Blue or Gray?
What? I have to be honest. No one wins. No one wins with this game.
It's making Kristen feel blue and gray.
You know, I find that if I'm, you know, working on a review that of a game I'm not really enjoying, cosplay helps.
So I'm a little confused by the title. It makes it sound like it takes place during the Civil War.
I got news for you. I'm confused about all of it. Yeah, I was like, Swashbucklers, you know, blue versus gray.
If Blood Rain can fight Billy the Kid, then
Swashbucklers implies pirates. Blue versus gray implies Civil War. And your main character is dressed like a cowboy. it's like going to a costume party. Like, I just don't understand. I should also add that I'm, you know, a good bit of the way into the game. I couldn't tell you what the overall goal of like my character's goal is. Like, I don't understand what I should be doing to win the game. I just don't know. Apparently I'm a cowboy who sails around a lot. It's really
Is there a song like I'm a sailing cowboy fighting the Civil War?
Maybe you're looking for the rest of the village.
I'm not actually making this up either. Here's the best part. I'm a schizophrenic. The cowboy's a schizophrenic.
Really?
Yes.
That's part of the story?
So one of the ways that you get, like, in-game hints is your inner voice talks to you.
Wow.
I get those,
you'll get this message on the screen that'll say, like, I'm your inner voice, and now I'm going to tell you what to do. And then you proceed to have this, like, conversation with your inner voice in which you, like, call him an asshole and tell him to leave you alone. But he insists that it's really important that he explain to you that you need to use the WASD keys to, like, complete this battle.
Well, you know, hey, at least they're trying. You know, most games, you just hear this voice. It doesn't identify itself at all. It's obviously your imaginary friend, but he does.
That's just you.
It's just rude.
So this is unusual. You're not supposed to hear a voice like that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, for Chuck, that's a simulation.
It's the only voice I hear. Right.
I'm glad they're
handling. Who's saying kill them all?
That dog was talking to me. I swear it.
The leprechaun tells me to burn things.
Burn them, Ralphie. Burn them all.
So, Jeremy, how about you? Are you playing anything better than Swashbucklers?
No, I couldn't possibly. I've been playing Team Fortress 2, though, again, for the first time since Christmas with Norm, and we're having some good times. Still waiting on those maps, which are going to be great. I also booted up Transport Tycoon Deluxe, which was ported to the iPhone.
Hmm.
Yes.
You know, in my country, there is a problem, and the problem is transport. So,
but I have never made a decision not to play a game so quickly in my life.
That reminds me, earlier today, I was reading a description of a game called, this is one of those games that they don't send to us, Prison Tycoon 3.
Prison Tycoon.
Not only was there a Prison Tycoon 1 and 2, but there's been a third one.
Kids, I want you to turn off this podcast.
And one of the features is that you are able to interrogate people for information.
Now, is this like a Rudy Giuliani production or what?
I don't know, but yeah, I want the game now.
It's like a 70s B movie.
It sounds like a dating game.
Well, no, that would be more
it
like
is, it's like Switchblade Sisters or like a, yeah. Which, by the way, is an excellent movie.
Yikes.
Switchblade Sisters?
Switchblade Sisters? I can lend it to you if you want to own it.
Reformed awesome. Girl, Reformed School Girls is also excellent.
Yes. Don't I know it?
If
the game.
If there was a game.
This just reminded me, though, of this last Sunday's Family Guy where they had a Shawshank Redemption reference. Cracked me up. But, yeah, if anybody saw that, you know what I'm talking about. So I guess it's my turn. I have been playing a lot of the beta of Sins of the Solar Empire, actually. It's a real-time 4X game. So, you know, you colonize planets and build massive fleets and attack other people and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. But you know, it's like, kind of like with Civilization where, you know, Sid Meier always says his philosophy is to get you saying, you know, one more turn. In this, there are no turns. So it just turns into five more minutes. And before I know it, it's 2 a.m. And, and yeah, I spent a lot of time on that game, and this is the beta. It's not even finished. Like the AI isn't quite smart in this build, and not only two of the three sides are in and stuff like that. But it's still a lot of fun.
Cool.
So I guess that's about it for us this episode. Jeremy, thanks for joining us in the office. This was fun.
Thanks for flying over just to host our podcast.
Thanks for leaving this film strip of Greg Biederman with Vulcan ears, drunk with a phaser in his hand on my desk.
Wait, what?
What?
It's been
really
spooking me out the whole time, man.
Oh my.
I don't know if I've seen that.
He's not wearing a whole lot.
No, he's not.
Oh, ew.
We're going to have to scan this and get it up on the site.
Can I be excused?
Yeah.
Permanently?
That ain't
check,
right.
Check, please.
Yeah. That ain't right.
I don't know if we can ever come back here.
This place is tainted. It's bad.
So I guess we're all leaving. So for myself, Jeremy Williams, Chuck Osborne, Kristen Salvatore, Logan Decker, and Norman Chan, we will see you next week. Please be sure to check out pcgamer.com/subscribe to order the magazine. And if you want to send us a question for next week, hit us up at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Or also, Jeremy, what's the phone number?
877-404-1337, extension 724, toll free.
And that's one minute limit on those. So keep it short and sweet.
Check out our new video podcast also.
Oh yes, our video podcast Portal inspired. It's pretty cool effect that our video production guys cooked up. So check that out.
Rated T for Teen.
Sierra Entertainment proudly presents World in Conflict, the most intense strategy game ever created. 5 out of 5, easily one of the best gaming experiences of 2007. GameSpy.com. 9.5 out of 10, GameSpot.com Editor's Choice. A PC Gamer Editor's Choice Award winner, 93%. IGN.com's 94% Editor's Choice. War is coming home. World in Conflict. Available now for the PC.
So do we got a fake outtakes now?
I was just going to say the same thing. That's why I stayed on.
OXM did, and they even added their own beeps.
Beep, beep.
You mother...
Beep.
Son of a dirty...
Beep.
So Crysis and the screenshots sure look real.
I'm just over here playing with my pooping chicken.
Beep.